In the autumn of 1944, the French countryside peace was suddenly disturbed by faint beams of light in the distance, growing brighter as a convoy of trucks barreled down the winding roads, their tired drivers straining their eyes to see just a few feet ahead. The elusive Red Ball Express carried vital gasoline and ammunition, fueling Patton's tanks and keeping the push into Germany alive. Without warning, the sharp crack of machine guns split the air. At first, Lieutenant Charles Waco thought it was a civilian pelting stones against their Jimmy vehicle. But when the whine of a German fighter overhead told him otherwise, he leapt out of his truck, with his men following closely behind. The convoy split apart. The men desperately took cover in the nearby trees, but the mission remained unchanged. The supplies had to reach the front. Without the Red Ball Express, the Allied advance through France was lost. During the first few weeks immediately after the Normandy invasion, the Allies made very little progress against the well-organized and stubborn enemy. By early July, as the Germans continued to hinder every advancement they made while trying to break out of their northern France beachhead, some Allied top brass even feared a return of the dreaded trench warfare. Later in the month, the German front finally cracked. Now, the plan called for Lieutenant General George Patton's Third Army to head west and clear the Brittany ports, while Lieutenant General Omar Bradley and British Field Marshal Bernard Montgomery's men forced the Germans east across the Seine River. However, as the American forces rushed to pursue what remained of the German army, the Allied High Command was surprised at their enemy's rapid retreat. Now, there was one major problem. They began to outrun their supply lines, becoming a critical issue by late August. Ironically, this was due to the Allies themselves, who months before the D-Day assault on June 6th had sent hundreds of aircraft roaming the skies across northern France, utterly destroying the French rail system to prevent the infamous Field Marshal Erwin Rommel from supplying his men on the coast. But if the railroads were useless for the Germans, they were also equally so for the Allies, trapping them in their own military strategy. Further adding to this issue was that because the Germans still held most of the essential channel ports of northern France and Belgium, namely Le Havre and Antwerp, most of the supplies and equipment to the advancing American armies came from the beaches at Normandy, parts of which were still being heavily defended. Soon, Patton's Third Army and Lieutenant General Courtney Hodge's First Army tanks, which consumed an outstanding total of 800,000 gallons of gas per day combined, came grinding to a halt, not because of enemy action, but because there was no gasoline and no logistical system in place to deliver enough quantities. With this, the Allies had to find alternative ways to keep their armies supplied. Within these last desperate days of August, American commanders, led by Brigadier General Ewart G. Plank, brainstormed nonstop for 36 hours and conceived the idea of the Red Ball Express, a massive convoy system designed to rush essential supplies from the Normandy beaches to the advancing front lines. Such a name originated from a railroad phrase, to Red Ball something, meaning to ship it as fast as possible, like an earlier Red Ball Express operation in Britain that sent valuable supplies to the English ports during the early days of the invasion. For this massive undertaking, Lieutenant Colonel Lauren Ayers, known as Little Patton, was assigned to oversee the operation. His first task was assembling vehicles and drivers. With insufficient trucks available, he scoured units all over Europe for more and formed provisional truck companies. Soon, any units with available trucks were told to give them up for the Red Ball Express, namely the GMC CCKW, nicknamed Jimmy or Deuce and a Half, a 2.5-ton with a 5-ton cargo capacity. Such a large-scale operation was made possible due to the industrial capacity of the United States, which produced over 2 million trucks during the entirety of the war. Additionally, the Red Ball Express also required contributions from multiple branches, from military police directing traffic, engineers maintaining the roads and bridges, and ordnance teams repairing vehicles. The route set for the Red Ball Express stretched from supply depots in Saint-Lô to La Coupe near Paris. A one-way loop was established because French roads were too congested for two-way traffic, with northbound roads reserved for loaded vehicles. Two additional highways from the Normandy beachhead to Chartres were set aside exclusively for these convoys. To ensure success, the U.S. Army Transportation Corps Museum established strict rules. Convoys were to consist of no fewer than 5 trucks, each marked with its position and spaced 60 feet apart, traveling at no more than 25 miles per hour. With the plan set in motion, General Planck declared, quote, "Let it never be said that a lack of supplies stopped Patton when the Germans couldn't." Any soldier not involved in critical duties was reassigned as a driver for the operation. This resulted in 3 out of 4 Red Ball Express drivers being African American, reflecting the military's policy of limiting black soldiers in non-combat roles based on assumptions about their abilities, despite their proven service in every major United States war. Through the Red Ball Express, many black soldiers finally had an opportunity to prove their worth in a critical role. Despite many never having driven before the war, they quickly adapted to their training, becoming vital to the operation's success. The urgency of the Red Ball Express was immense, as, according to the Transportation Corps Museum, on average, an American infantry division required 150 tons of gasoline per day. In comparison, an armored division needed 350 tons per day. All-day-long mobility was crucial to this operation, especially because the German army still relied on horse-drawn transport, leading to the operation's official motto being tout de suite, or immediately in French. According to John O'Leary, who served on the 3628th Truck Company, quote, "Patton wanted us to eat, sleep, and drive, but mostly drive." The need for supplies in northern France was so great that the Red Ball reached its peak performance in the first 5 days of operation. Beginning with only 67 truck companies, by August 29th, about 132 companies operated nearly 6,000 vehicles that carried 12,342 tons of supplies to forward depots, a record that went unmatched in the 14 following weeks. As the fighting moved beyond the Seine and Paris, the army extended the routes further east. Civilian and unrelated military traffic was strictly banned from the Red Ball route, a rule enforced by military police and drivers. During their journeys, the convoys often ran at full speed down the middle of the road, trying to avoid mines on the shoulders, and stopped for absolutely nothing. Despite the original rules, mechanics tweaked the Jimmy's carburetors, pushing them past their 50 miles an hour factory limits, while drivers quickly learned to remove the governors that held back power on uphill climbs, hastily reattaching them for inspections. As the truck driver's antics became more and more famous around the front lines, both British soldiers and French civilians knew to quickly clear the road when Red Ball convoys came barreling through. The vehicles traveled in convoys, each with a number marking its position, with a lead jeep carrying a blue flag and a cleanup jeep at the rear with a green one. With so many daily operations, the vehicle's batteries drained, engines overheated, motors burned out from lack of grease and oil, transmissions were pushed to their limits, bolts loosened, and drive shafts fell off. In the first month alone, Red Ball trucks went through 40,000 tires, most of which were retreaded and recycled, often returning from repair depots, glued and taped back together. Keeping the supplies flowing meant maintenance rules often went out the window. A common saying at the time was, quote, "Red Ball trucks break, but don't break." The drivers knew every box of ammunition, every crate of rations, and every package of medical supplies could save lives at the front lines, creating a constant atmosphere of intense urgency among the supply teams. According to Fred Reese, a former mechanic in a European theater ambulance unit, recalled, quote, "Oh boy, do I remember that Red Ball gang. They were a hell of a crew. They used to carry ammunition boxes twice as high as the top of the truck, and when they went down the highway, they swayed back and forth. They had no fear. Those guys were crazy, like they were getting paid for every run." Racing to keep up with Patton's rapid advance, supply drivers carved out improvised routes, ensuring supplies would be waiting when his troops arrived. Driving night and day, week after week, exhaustion was a close companion of the truck drivers, who took turns at the wheel. As the trucks rolled along at dashing speeds, they passed scenes of war's destruction, decaying livestock, bombed-out villages, injured soldiers, and charred vehicles. At night, drivers drove blind or used dim cat-eye lights to avoid detection by the enemy. Life on the road with the Red Ball Express was far from safe, especially for the black drivers. Often, commanding officers would send them into areas suspected of harboring enemy soldiers. While driving through Belgium, truck driver Rudolf Kohler and his convoy faced constant threats from mines and enemy artillery. During one mission, a German 88mm gun struck their column, destroying the first two trucks. When the convoy stopped, the nervous drivers made a deal with their captain. They would only continue if he led the way in his jeep. After assessing the situation, the captain found an alternate, safer route. Though supply routes rarely saw direct combat, Red Ball crews faced increasing threats from German aircraft as they approached enemy territory. Even with their diminished numbers, Luftwaffe fighters still swooped down on vulnerable convoys. The trucks carried 50-caliber machine gun mounts in their cabs, but these minimal defenses offered little protection against air attacks. First Lieutenant Charles Waco remembers being aboard a convoy when they were caught by German fighters. Initially believing the noise was coming from someone flinging stones at corrugated metal, upon realizing it was actually from the clatter of machine guns from above, he leapt out of the vehicle and scattered, along with hundreds of other startled truckers, taking cover in ditches as enemy planes attacked. Nonetheless, their efforts were well appreciated by top brass. In his October 1944 communication to the Red Ball Express, Supreme Commander Dwight D. Eisenhower, who over the past 2 months had witnessed firsthand how the truckers averted a logistical disaster during the Allied push across France, stated, quote, "To the Red Ball Express falls the tremendous task of getting vital supplies from ports and depots to combat troops, when and where such supplies are needed, material without which armies might fail. To you drivers and mechanics and your officers who keep the Red Ball vehicles constantly moving, I wish to express my deep appreciation. You are doing an excellent job." By the fall of 1944, the majority of the Germans had been driven out of France and the Low Countries they'd forcefully taken nearly 5 years earlier. The Allies had captured and restored key channel ports, especially Antwerp, and repaired French railways, greatly improving their ability to move supplies into Europe. With the flow of Allied supplies across the continent, mainly thanks to the men of the Red Ball Express, fewer convoys were needed to make the long trek from Normandy to the front lines. Now a victim of its own success, the logistics route was officially ended in November 1944, but not before one final test. On December 16, 1944, Adolf Hitler launched one last desperate operation to win the war in the West, or at least strike hard enough to compel the Americans and British into a separate armistice without the influence of Soviet Russia and other factions. German forces struck without warning through Belgium's Ardennes Forest, overwhelming the scattered American defenses. The unexpected offensive carved such a deep path into Allied territory that the resulting protrusion in the front lines created what commanders would call a bulge on their situation maps. The Red Ball Express's massive supply deliveries in the months before the Battle of the Bulge proved crucial. When German forces attacked, American troops found themselves well-stocked with fuel, ammunition, and weapons from these forward supply dumps. The convoys were also vital for the rapid evacuation of thousands of gallons of fuel from the forward areas, ensuring the fuel stayed out of the hands of the attacking Germans, whose fuel-hungry tanks could have used it to exploit their earliest significant breakthroughs. Eisenhower ordered the 101st and 82nd Airborne Divisions to converge on Bastogne, Belgium. The Red Ball Express answered the call, rushing thousands of troops to the sector. This rapid deployment of forces proved crucial, as the supply network's efficiency and flexibility helped shift the battle's momentum. As the dust settled after the Battle of the Bulge, the Red Ball Express, having dutifully served its purpose, faded from the front lines. While its days were short, the elusive Red Ball Express myth never really went away. In fact, its name was so embedded in the later days of the war, and its nature and logistics so secretive, that most of the men who drove trucks in general, even well after the route's end, always believed they were on a secret logistics mission. According to Welby Franz, a trucking company commander who arrived in France in February 1945, quote, "That's what we were all told." The convoy run was a landmark in the history of military logistics. Originally scheduled to last only 2 weeks, the operation went on for 82 days, the truckers delivering more than 400,000 tons of gasoline, oil, combat materials, and vital provisions to forward operating bases. Despite the challenges and racism they faced nearly every day, the truck drivers of the Red Ball Express, most of whom were African American, kept the supplies flowing often at significant personal risk. And while their contributions weren't always fully recognized at the time, Their impact on the war effort was undeniable. A generation later, Colonel John Eisenhower, a veteran of the European theater and son of the Supreme Allied Commander in Europe and later President of the United States, said of the convoys, quote, "The spectacular nature of the advance through France was due in as great a measure to the men who drove the Red Ball trucks as to those who drove the tanks. Without the Red Ball, the advance across France could not have been made."